Anyway, so that's all right. Okay, thank you all for coming, and I extend my appreciation to Robert, Fran, JT for all the support and hospitality yesterday. It was really an enjoyable time. So this is, I'm going to report on some work we've been doing on soybeans in South Texas. In contrast to what you just saw from Carl's presentation, we are at a situation where soils are actually much higher in some of these salts, especially potassium. And typically, growers do not, they are not advised to add potassium to the soil. But more recently, we found that during the season, some of these crops actually show potassium deficiencies, especially fruiting crops, vegetables, and others. And so it turns out that there's a lot of fixation in some of the potassium in the soil. So when this came up, this was a good opportunity to look at a contrast with lower testing soils. In Texas, we actually have a range of soils that show lower testing potassium levels. So by way of background, you've seen some of this from Robert's presentation and also Carl's. The benefits of potassium are already well known, but in our situation in South Texas, obviously this fixation of potassium, but also competitive inhibition uptake with calcium as well as magnesium is becoming more and more of an issue. So that even soils that are showing high potassium tests during the towards the end of the season, crops still show potassium deficiency. And we have been really concerned in the past with quality, not so much with yield, because most growers, especially vegetable growers, can get the yields that they need. But quality is often compromised, especially on things like soluble solids that are dependent on potassium. So again, by way of background, the major sources that are available to growers in areas that potassium is needed are very well known, muriate of potash, MOP. We have potassium nitrate, as well as potassium sulfate. And more recently, so we've been interested in polyhalite as a possible substitute for some of these fertilizer sources. So our objectives, kind of similar to the report that Carl just presented, were quite simple, straightforward. Wanted to see what the yield and quality responses would be under our situation with fairly medium to high potassium levels. And also to try and identify optimum application rates. By way of methods, trials were conducted in commercial fields with cooperating growers in 2013 as well as 14 in South Texas. I don't want to touch anything here. So the area that we work in is South Texas. It's fairly fertile region. This is the delta of the Rio Grande that straddles the border between Texas and Mexico. Very important area for vegetable as well as fruit crops for Texas. There's citrus, we have sugarcane, sorghum, grain and forage sorghum are main crops also. A range of vegetables, including melons, onions, and others. As you can see from this table, the soils tend to be fairly alkaline, with pH exceeding 8, sometimes up to 8.6. Conductivity is not that high compared to other soils within the state, but potassium and magnesium, and especially calcium, are fairly high. And so you can imagine what's happening in terms of competitive uptake inhibition, which we've seen and documented in other crops. And our solution to that in the past had been to supplement some of that apparent deficiency with foliar application of potassium. In this case, we're fairly just concerned with soil-applied potassium and potential responses to yield and quality in soybeans. So we use this variety, vernal, which is fairly adapted to the area. Soil type, obviously, one of the main soil types in the area is a range of fine Hidalgo loam with pockets of really sandy soils. So these were planted, the experiments were planted on raised beds with 30-inch centers. That's fairly common in the region, with surface irrigation. So growers typically use furrow irrigation, but more recently they are switching over to drip irrigation in order to conserve water and also take advantage of some of the liquid forms of fertilizer. By way of treatments, again, these were fairly straightforward, no blends. We've done other studies looking at blends of polyhalite with other nutrient sources. But in this case, we're just concerned with looking at differences or potential effects of polyhalite and other sources. We had, in 2013, we had just three sources, MOP, polyhalite, and potassium sulfate. In 2014, we added SOPM. These are some of the details. Other husbandry details, irrigation in 2013 was a fairly dry year. Irrigation amounted to about 533 millimeters of water, slightly higher in 2014. And the grower also ended up putting in a lot more fertilizer in 14. Standard measurements, we did height, leaf, chlorophyll content meters, content measurements, as well as other physiological measurements that I'm not going to report today. Yield and yield components, including pods per plant, seeds per pod, and the average seed weight, as well as yields. Quality parameters included protein as well as minerals within the grains. We also looked at leaf mineral concentrations before and after harvest. Looking at this first slide of grain yield in general, in 2013, again, a more droughty year, growing conditions were not all that favorable. Yields were substantially lower than in 2014. And we think, despite these lower yields, we found that responses were a little bit more significant in 2013 than 14. In 2014, there was actually an interaction between application rate and source, wherein you had SOPM and polyhalite showing much higher relative yields than the other two sources. There was so much variability in some of these at each rate, so that the some of the differences were not really significant. The regressions for each one in 2013 were fairly significant for potassium chloride and polyhalite, but not so for potassium sulfate. Looking at some of the physiological parameters, leaf chlorophyll content. Fertilization didn't really make a dent on this particular parameter. Height in general was much higher in 2013 compared to 2014. And I think that's also one of the reasons that yields were much lower in 2013, because those are more vegetative growth than reproductive development during that year. There's a lot of seed abortion, and also in terms of seed content per pod, they were much lower. So moving on to yield components, with the pods per plant, this was the only parameter that showed significant differences in terms of rate of application, but also in 2013, some differentiation there between the sources. The other two components, seeds per pod, but also average seed weight, were not significantly affected. And the strongest effects in 2014 were in terms also of pods per plant, but not so much in the seed weight. Seed weights generally range anywhere from 112 to 180 milligrams. which is way well within the range that commercial growers report. Okay, grain quality in terms of protein. Again, values were higher generally in 2014 than in 13. And fertilizer source effects were similar at each application rate. But the rate effects were only significant for potassium sulfate and in 2014. In terms of mineral contents, these were only significant for grain but not so much for leaves, both before and after harvest. And potassium in particular was the only mineral that was significantly affected by the treatment. Calcium did not change appreciably, so too was magnesium responded. Magnesium and sulfur only responded to fertilizer source with a significant level there at less than 0.06 level. So to summarize all of this, seems like responses to fertilizer source and rate differed between the two growing seasons, and this is most likely due to the bad growing seasons, mostly droughty in the first year, 2013. Even though yields were and yield components were significantly greater in 14, the strongest treatment effects were actually observed in 13. So it seems as if, it's consistent with the observation that one of the effects of potassium is to help with stress tolerance. In this case, 2014 was much drier than 14, so it's not surprising that most of the responses were significant in 13 and not 14. Again, yield and quality responses to polyhalite were generally similar to equivalent rates in from the other two or three sources. And treatment seem to saturate at around 100 kilograms of K2O per acre. We've also looked at uptake levels as well as soil changes in some of these minerals before and after, but generally there are no significant differences. Again, not surprising given the high levels of some of these nutrients in our case. Now, in northeast Texas, where we have much more infertile soils, there could be a different situation over there and responses. But where we are, there seems to be a response to fertilizer application compared to the controls, but no differences between the sources. So it seems that polyhalite is can be a substitute for some of these other sources at the right price, as Robert mentioned earlier. Acknowledgements, I'd like to thank Sirius Minerals for the support provided for these trials, as well as in-kind support from my institution, and also the generosity of the collaborating growers in providing the land and some of the equipment and labor for collecting the data. And with that, I'll stop and hopefully there's time for one or two.
Do we have time for a question or two? We only have one more speaker after this, so, yeah.
From the radiation, you did some measurements or have some data you could relate with the difference between the 2013 and 2014?
Yeah, other than the fact that during the rainy days, obviously, they are cloudy, but typical growing seasons in our area, they'll exceed your 2,000 micromoles per meter squared per second. So solar radiation was not an issue. I think most likely is water input, rain, differences in water input and fertilizer, nitrogen fertilization between the two seasons.
The 2004, your data showed a higher grade, 200, 250, get a higher yield. But why do you your conclusion is the handle is optimal rate.
Well, actually, when you look at it, the regression on most of those is not really significant once you get to that stage. When you look at, when you compare 100 to 150 and 250, they're not really different. Yeah. That was the basis of the conclusion.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.